Good afternoon, and welcome to today's Jewish Policy Center webinar. I am Shoshana Bryan, Senior Director of the JPC, and your host. I always tell you during the JPC commercial that we do both foreign and domestic policy. Today, I think we're doing both together. What is happening on American college campuses is domestic, because it's here, but it hinges on foreign policy, and it hinges on how the United States sees its friends and allies and adversaries both here and abroad. So mixed bag today. Our guest, Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation, is going to talk about campus upheaval and how universities and governments can help ensure that all students have safe and unobstructed access to higher education. Before we ask him to take the floor, let's do the rest of the commercial. The Jewish Policy Center supports a strong American defense capability, US security cooperation with Israel, and missile defense. That last one got a big boost a few weeks ago when Israel was under attack from Iran. And so big hat tip to Ronald Reagan, who 40 years ago believed that defense was the way to go. Thank you, President Reagan. As an organization that sits slightly to the right of center, the JPC advocates for small government, low taxes, free trade, fiscal responsibility, energy security, free speech, and intellectual diversity, which is why we're here today. You can find it all on our website at jewishpolicycenter.org. There you can read and sign up for our Insight articles and our magazine, In Focus Quarterly. The spring issue of In Focus is up. It is devoted to the events that happened following the Hamas pogrom of October 7th and Israel's ongoing battle for the security of its people. That is jewishpolicycenter.org. Right now, our priority is to support the legitimacy and security of Israel against anyone who would deny them, including the UN and elements of our own government. And we absolutely support the right and authority of the democratically elected government of Israel to determine the strategy and tactics that the IDF will use in its war. This they should not abdicate to anybody else. It's Israel's job, Israel's determination to bring the perpetrators of the massacres, rapes, rocket barrages, and torture to justice, and to make Hamas and its fellow travelers release the hostages. Today, however, we are focused closer to home. American college campuses are boiling. The ostensible reason is concern for Palestinians in Gaza, but protesters and rioters have cheered for Hamas, for Houthi attacks on Americans in the Red Sea, and Intifada. Some have actually outright called for the dissolution of the State of Israel, and others have attacked Jews on campus. And increasingly, protesters have defaced American monuments and burned the American flag, making some of us wonder if this is a repeat of 1968, a new incarnation of 1968, or something else. Some of the protesters are students, some of them are not. In New York, the police have found weapons on some university campuses. Politics aside, which I acknowledge is difficult, what recourse is there for the occupation and destruction of university property and threats to or exclusion of a minority group on campus? How far does the First Amendment go? That's why we have Hans von Spakovsky here with us today. Hans is an authority on a wide range of issues, including civil rights, civil justice, the First Amendment, immigration, rule of law, and government reform. He is a senior legal fellow in the Heritage Foundation's Edwin Meese III Center for Legal and Judicial Studies. As manager of the Education Law Reform Election Reform Initiative at Heritage, Hans also studies and writes about campaign finance restrictions, voter fraud and voter ID, enforcement of federal voting rights laws, and voting equipment standards. And I think we're going to have him back to do that with us one day. But his analysis, and today we're going to get to today, his analysis and commentary have appeared everywhere you think they should. Wall Street Journal, Washington Times, USA Today, National Review Online. His series for PJ Media, every single one, was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. He has testified before Congress, before state agencies, and a variety of nonprofit organizations. And he's taught law at George Mason University School of Law. And my favorite point in the whole introduction is this. He is a graduate of Vanderbilt University School of Law, and I'm going to brag because my son is an associate professor of history and of law at Vanderbilt. So I am thrilled to bring another Vanderbilt person to our screen, our stage, whatever it is that we have here. Hans von Spakovsky, thank you for joining us. And the floor is yours.
Well, thanks for having me. I didn't know that about Vanderbilt. And by the way, can I brag very quickly about my younger brother? You were talking about the anti-ballistic missile system, which Israel has, thank goodness. My brother, he's retired now, was a civilian engineer for the U.S. Army Missile Command. And in fact, he was part of the project that we jointly had with Israel to help develop that, and used to travel regularly to Israel as part of that. So let me tell you the first thing that people need to dismiss, and that is don't get confused by the First Amendment. You know, I keep getting questions. I keep hearing talking about, well, you know, we can't do anything to violate the First Amendment rights of these. And I'm not going to call them protesters. I'm going to call them what I think they are, which is hooligans. The First Amendment allows you to speak peacefully. And if you want a great example of that, remember just a couple of months ago, we had a huge peaceful protest in Washington, D.C., where my office is located. In fact, I walked from my office over to the mall of Americans from all over the country who came to support Israel. It was entirely peaceful. There was no harassment, no intimidation, no defacement of statues, no violence, no breaking windows, no invasion of buildings. All the kinds of things that we are actually been seeing on our college campuses. And if there's one thing the Supreme Court has made very clear is that when First Amendment protests, for example, are going on, it's extremely reasonable for the government, private institutions, and others to set the time, place, and manner of those protests. I mean, that's why in Washington, D.C., you have to go get a permit to do that. You know, the city can't unreasonably withhold it, but what we're seeing on college campuses goes far beyond the First Amendment. The other comparison I think people should easily make, because it's an apt one, is that, look, as you said, there is outright direct support through signs, verbally, for Hamas. Hamas has been a designated terrorist organization by the U.S. State Department for decades. And so we have individuals who are expressing their support for Hamas, expressing their support basically for genocide, because that's what they are talking about. So again, don't get confused by the First Amendment rights that individuals have, because this has gone far, far beyond that. So the question is, what could be done about this? Of course, if we actually had good college administrators, they would be working closely with law enforcement to immediately stop this. You all have seen that that's what happened in Texas. In Texas, this is not happening because of the fact that the college administrators there worked with the governor, with the state police and local authorities, and stopped this at the very beginning. That's not going on at other universities. What should be happening is this. First of all, any of these students who are not U.S. citizens shouldn't be here. You know, if they are here illegally and they are participating in this kind of behavior, they should be immediately picked up and deported. If they are students who are here legally, they are on a visa, they also should be immediately removed, the visa canceled and removed. Now, you may say, well, can the U.S. government do that? The answer is an easy yes. Supreme Court has said on numerous occasions that the rights of aliens in this country are very limited, particularly the government can restrict as much as possible their participation in our democratic process. And there is a specific immigration statute that gives the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security the ability to cancel the visa of any alien in the country at his discretion. So basically, for any reason or no reason, and those students who are engaging in this, who are supporting a terrorist group, why in the world would we want to allow them to continue to be in the United States, and particularly to be at our educational institutions? To the extent that any of these individuals are government employees, local, state, or federal, again, two things ought to happen. One, if they have security clearances, that ought to be immediately canceled. Two, they should be immediately terminated from their jobs. Why? Do we really want individuals working for our governments who support a designated terrorist organization? I mean, that is such an obvious common sense thing that I'm astonished that anyone would even question that. Now, when authorities are unwilling, I mean, there's all kinds of things the government can be doing. Let me give you another example. There's a criminal civil rights statute. I'm well aware of that statute because I used to work in the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Justice Department during the Bush administration. It's 18 U.S.C. 241. And what it does is it prohibits individuals from conspiring or going in disguise on public highways, public transit areas, or private property to deny the rights of other Americans, including harassing them, intimidating, or trying to prevent them from exercising their rights, for example, their right to their educational benefits. That part of it, going in disguise, well, we'll probably give you a clue as to why this statute was passed. It was aimed at the Ku Klux Klan. And the behavior of these groups on campuses, I got to tell you, is very similar to the Ku Klux Klan. And I don't think anyone would be questioning any of the tactics that I'm talking about, any of the college administrators immediately expelling these students, for example, if there were all these individuals on campus voicing their support for the Ku Klux Klan, and perhaps reciting something saying from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean. In other words, saying that all Black Americans should be sent out of the country and back to Africa or otherwise killed. Because that is exactly the message these individuals are putting on these campuses. If this was the Ku Klux Klan, no one would be questioning taking severe action against any of these individuals. Because of this criminal statute, the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Justice Department, where I ought to work, they have a criminal section. And that criminal section ought to be opening up an investigation along with the FBI of every single individual who's been arrested on any of these college campuses or, frankly, otherwise is there engaging in intimidation, harassment, criminal trespassing, who's wearing a mask. That is an easy statute. It's very clear how it works. And yet, what do we have? The Justice Department not doing anything about it. Now, there is a similar civil statute that's written exactly the same way. And when I say civil, what I mean is that individuals who are injured, like Jewish students who are harassed, intimidated, physically assaulted, deprived of their educational benefits, their ability to go to classes, to attend school where they've paid tuition, they have the ability to file a civil lawsuit against individuals who conspire or go in disguise to deprive them of their rights. That's 42 United States Code 1985. And again, that's something that I would hope advocacy organizations would pick it up. You know, you would think the ACLU, given what they were originally said they were organized to do, would be out there trying to help these students. Of course, they're not going to do that. The other thing to keep in mind here, and again, this is a situation where there is both action that could be taken by the U.S. government and action that could be taken by private parties. It is a criminal violation of federal law to give material support to a terrorist organization. Are these students, are these teachers, are the outsiders participating in this? How much support are they giving to Hamas? Does it fit within the statute? The FBI ought to be investigating that. We've heard no reports that they are. What's interesting about this is the civil side of it. Part of that same anti-terrorism statute that set up that provision, making it illegal to give material support to a terrorist organization, is part of that statute. It's, again, it's 18 United States Code 2333, provides American nationals who are injured by terrorist organizations to file civil lawsuits against them in United States courts. Such a lawsuit has just been filed. Been filed in the Eastern District of Virginia, and it's been filed against two organizations, the American Muslims for Palestine and National Students for Justice in Palestine. It's a 49-page complaint, and it's worth reading. I'm sure if you Google it, you can find it. Let me tell you why it's worth reading. It goes through and in great detail describes these organizations and basically lays out in detail how they are just front organizations for Hamas, that they are distributing Hamas materials, that they are acting as a public relations agent for Hamas, that they are the ones helping to organize what's going on these campuses. And so this civil lawsuit has been filed by a number of American nationals who were injured in the October 7th attack. Also, some Israeli citizens have also sued. So this is a great civil action against the people that are organizing these protests. And I would hope to see, frankly, a whole rash of lawsuits like this from students all over the country and their families and others injured by this. Now, the other thing that people should keep in mind is that when you're accepted as a student at a college or university, you're entering into a contract with that university. You know, you're paying them tuition, and in a lot of cases, particularly the Ivy League schools, places like Columbia, you're paying a lot of money in tuition. In exchange for that, they are supposed to provide you not only with the educational benefits that you've contracted for, but under the Civil Rights Act, because all of these universities, including the private ones, receive federal funding, they have to do so in a non-discriminatory manner. That's Title VI. And to the extent that a university is sponsoring or enabling the kind of discrimination that we've been seeing going on against Jewish students. I mean, look, I'm in all of my undergrad school is MIT. MIT has been horrible in the way it has not protected its Jewish students from what has been happening on campus. In fact, I wrote a separate piece about this, going after them for that. Well, MIT and other universities, if they are enabling this kind of discriminatory conduct, including harassment and intimidation, if they are not providing a safe environment for their students, I think they are liable, again, under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act for discrimination. And that can be enforced by the government, but private parties can also sue. And again, I would hope that parents, students, and others out there who are experiencing this will start exploring the options of suing these universities over this. The other thing that I think people should keep in mind is that, and this is kind of important, is, you know, the federal government has a terrorist watch list, right? You know, that's the list they use when, for example, foreigners are coming to the U.S. Well, I got to tell you, I think we as a society should do everything we can to create our own private terrorist watch list. You know, if a student at Columbia University is breaking into buildings, breaking windows, fighting with campus security, shouting, yelling, illustrating their support for a terrorist organization, I certainly wouldn't hire them. I wouldn't want them a member of any kind of club I'm in, whether it's a student club or something else. And as much as possible needs to be done to publicize the names of these individuals, who they are, so that people in private industry and elsewhere can make their own decisions about this. If you want a great example of this, you know that when the October 7th attack happened, not too long after that, a number of student groups signed a letter in support of Hamas and against Israel. That included four student organizations at Harvard Law School. A friend of mine, a good friend, J. Christian Adams, wrote an article. He simply went to the letter and pulled out the names of the organizations at Harvard Law School who had signed on to this atrocious letter. And then he looked up their websites, which are on the Harvard Law School, and published the names of the presidents of those organizations. Now, what happened next was frankly terrific. A number of those individuals were third-year law students. They had jobs already lined up with particular law firms, and those law firms all withdrew the job offers. That's the kind of thing that needs to happen. Anyone who says, well, they're just students, they're young, they don't know what they're doing, sorry. But at the age of 18, you can join the military, fight for your country, vote, and a whole lot of other things. And so the idea that a college student is somehow not responsible for their stupidity or their bad actions, I just don't buy that at all. And we need to, as much as possible as a society, hold these individuals accountable for what they are doing now. And the final thing I'll tell you is what astonishes me about the support that I've seen these individuals express for Hamas is that, you know, the State Department, our State Department, issues reports. I suggest folks go and Google the last State Department report on Hamas and how it has run Gaza. It is as bad as the way North Korea is run. It is a murderous dictatorship that arrests, tortures, and kills its political opponents. All the kind of things that we as a civilized society, both in America and Israel, think is inhumane, they do in Hamas, in Gaza under Hamas's leadership. And anyone who is in any way supporting them is in essence supporting the worst kind of dictatorship, the kinds that we have seen in our past history. And I fear that if we don't take actions now, particularly against individuals in this country that support this, it's going to have a very bad long-term effect. The final thing I wanted to be sure and mention this. I would recommend that people, I think you could probably get this on YouTube or Google, pull up a movie from 1940 called The Mortal Storm. If you want to see what is happening on college campuses, you should pull this movie up. The movie was based on a book written by an English woman who moved to Austria in 1924. And then she moved to Munich in 1930. This was one of the first movies made by Hollywood that actually showed the rise of fascism and what happened under it. And the story is basically about a well-respected professor. They never say in the movie that he's Jewish, but he's clearly Jewish. And what happens to him as the kind of elements we see in our campuses today start to pervade the campus, start to take over the administration as he loses and is not only the respect of, but is starting to be attacked by students, other teachers, administrators, and what happens to him. Up until this time, Hollywood refused to make movies attacking the Nazis and attacking fascism. You know why? Well, because their biggest market outside the United States was Germany. And they didn't want to make any movies that would cause them to lose money, kind of the way Hollywood today doesn't want to make movies portraying the Chinese and the Chinese communist government the way it really is. But you want to see something scary and see something that describes, I think, accurately what's happening on our college campuses, pull this movie up. It has one of my favorite actors starring in it, Jimmy Stewart. Anyway, that's all I've got. I'm happy to answer questions otherwise.
Okay, so I was going to start with hooliganism, but I'm not, because you just said the other really important thing, and that is money. So one of the things, one of the reasons people suspect that colleges are very nice to foreign students and not interested in doing a lot of the things that you said, I mean, the campuses clearly, college administrators clearly are not doing things they could do, is because their students from foreign countries, first of all, are paying full tuition, which for them is a big deal, and they don't want to aggravate those people. But also, if you look at the list of countries that support American colleges and universities, the number one giver, the number one donor country is Qatar, which is the home to Hamas. Number two is China. You just mentioned, you know, people don't want to make a movie about China because China is financially wedded to us in various ways. And number three is, no, I'm sorry, it's not number three, but in the top 10 is Lebanon, a bankrupt country where people go dumpster diving. They are in the top 10 list of foreign countries that give money to American universities. I suspect that money is Iranian through Hezbollah. So is there a way to cut it off? Is there something, the universities won't cut it off. Is there some way that the federal government can cut it off?
Yeah, we actually been discussing this just this week here at the Heritage Foundation where I work. And we haven't come out officially with this, but look, in the very same way that the federal government, Department of Homeland Security, as you know, limits the number of work visas that are issued to corporations that want to bring in a foreign worker to work in the U.S. You know, a lot of high-tech companies, folks in Silicon Valley and elsewhere, have for years often brought in people from outside the country to work in the computer industry, and we strictly limit those numbers. I got to tell you, I think there should be a similar limitation on the number of students that universities are allowed to bring in to study at American colleges across the country. There are a whole myriad of policy reasons for that. But I think definitely, I can tell you this, that is well within the power of Congress. Congress has 100% authority under the Constitution over the rules governing the admittance of aliens into the country. And that includes students who are studying here. And you know what's driving these universities is pure greed because of the huge amounts of money these students are paying.
Or their governments are paying.
Or their governments are paying, right.
And you could look at, I have two thoughts that come from this. Maybe another way to deal with that is for the federal government to withhold money from those colleges and universities in the amounts that they get from those foreign countries.
That's a potential too. Can I tell you a quick story about this that shows the stupidity of university administrators?
Sure.
When I went off to law school from MIT, because for various reasons, I didn't get there till a week before classes were going to start. So I didn't have time to look for an apartment. So I signed up for graduate housing. I ended up in graduate housing with a Chinese student who was there on a student visa in the graduate program. Now, what department was he in? He was in the he was studying nuclear engineering. Now, the only reason that the Chinese government doesn't allow any students to come here unless they are true true red communist, because they don't want anyone else getting out of the country. The only reason he was in the nuclear engineering department was to study how to build nuclear bombs and take that technology back to the United States. It was absolutely idiotic for Vanderbilt or any other university to be allowing any Chinese students approved by the Chinese government and their secret police to be studying nuclear engineering in the country. But that's the kind of thing that is happening at universities all over the country.
Iranians did that in the 1970s before they were cut off. There were a lot of Iranian engineers and nuclear scientists. And I will say one of the finer things that President Jimmy Carter did was in 1980, restrict those visas. But the university has to be willing to do it, or Congress has to step up. And I suspect that cutting off their federal money might help them decide what they want to do.
I agree.
But for the students themselves, there was a lot of money that went into these student encampments and things for the protesters. Is it a crime for, and the money came from what are called NGOs, and some of them may be legit and some of them may be a little weird. But is it a crime for an NGO to support the sort of encampment that is blatantly anti-American and pro-Hamas, pro a terror organization? Is there any restriction on that?
Well, that's where the federal statute comes in on prohibiting material support for terrorist organizations. What you'd have to do is open up an investigation, and that would be the FBI, of the kind of support that's being given by these NGOs to these organizations. And is it explicit that it's intended to support a terrorist organization, and how material is it? So that's the kind of thing that right now the FBI ought to be looking at and ought to be investigating.
And isn't, as far as we know.
As far as we know, they're not.
Okay, so goes to the next question that someone sent in. It is clear that some of the individuals in these places are supporting Hamas. They say so. They wave the flag. They tell you exactly who they are and what they want. Are they liable for charges of material support to terrorists?
Individuals are too, but again, it depends on how far does that support go. I mean, for example, if they're receiving support materials, money that's flowing to them from ultimately Hamas, maybe it's coming through other front organizations, but they're then using that money, that materiel, yeah, they might be liable under the statute. Certainly, they shouldn't be students. They should be expelled from the university just for supporting a terrorist organization. Like I said, again, just going back to, I have no doubt that any student expressing verbal support for the Ku Klux Klan would be immediately expelled from Columbia University and all these other colleges, and justifiably so.
So you call the students out. There's a difference here between students and agitators, professional instigators, and right. Students. You call the students hooligans, which I thought was very nice of you. I think there are other words, but we'll stick with hooligans for right now. In your view, do they know what they're doing? The students, the agitators, something else. But when you see these people calling for Palestine from the river to the sea and calling for Intifada and calling for more October 7th, are they being drawn in to something because it's a community activity and they want to be on the ins? Or do you think they understand what they're doing?
Look, I don't know. I don't know the answer to this. What I will tell is they either know and support what this terrorist organization is doing, or they're really stupid. I mean, it's one of the others. Yeah, you can't. Like I said, all you got to do is Google the State Department report on Hamas, and immediately you'll see the kind of horrible dictatorship they've been running in Gaza ever since they took control and retained control. And so you've got to be really stupid if you don't know that and you're out there supporting them.
So you could
one or the other. Like I said, it's either stupidity or no. You agree with their aims and you support them.
So in either way, it seems from the way you put it, and I personally would agree with it, that the universities ought to be taking them all equally seriously.
Oh, yes, absolutely so. And like I said, any peaceful protest is one thing, as long as it's in a time, place, and manner that has been that is permitted and approved. But criminal trespassing by outsiders, invading classrooms, harassing a Jewish teacher so that they can't leave their classroom or their office, all those things are actions that if a student supports, takes part in that, they shouldn't just be suspended, they should be expelled. You cannot have individuals like that on a college campus.
Okay, go to the third group of individuals. We've got hooligans, we have professional agitators, and then we have professors. And we have a couple of questions here from people, excuse me, who have been listening, who want to know the difference between what the university can do with a professor, tenured or not, and what it can do with a student, and then what it can do with someone who isn't a student. What can they do about professors?
Well, it's one thing for a professor to simply express an opinion, although I have to tell you, if a professor to me expressed an opinion supporting a terrorist organization and genocide, supporting the Ku Klux Klan and the hanging of Black Americans, I would fire them immediately, and I wouldn't think twice about it. To me, the First Amendment prevents the government, for example, from censoring you. It does not prevent private institutions from not having someone who believes in and is going to teach that to students from being in the classroom. By the way, government out of controlling the curriculum in the provincial areas. And one of the reasons for that is because if you look at the history of Nazi Germany, look at the history of communism in Russia and China, fascism in Italy, all of those parties, one of the first things they did when they took control was take control of the country politically, was take control of the schools, because their whole intent was to brainwash and propagandize students starting at a young age, because that was where their future power lies. And I think we're seeing that throughout the U.S. If you want an example of this, an atrocious example, I suggest people go to, there's a great media website called PJ Media. And Christian Adams and I wrote a 10 article series there last year, where we took the curricula of the 10 highest rated law schools in the United States, according to US News and Report, and just simply reported on what they are teaching in those schools and what the top law schools have changed into, including Columbia. Columbia was on the list, is into radical left-wing socialist warrior training camps. I mean, that's what they are teaching students at those schools. And if I'm fortunate, my kids are all out of college now. But if I had high school age kids, don't send them to any school until you have looked at the actual curriculum and what's being taught, and you look at the professors there. Because I got to tell you right now, if any of my kids were talking, for example, about going to law school, I would tell them to avoid every single one of the Ivy League schools because of these kind of issues.
So that's interesting. We have talked on this program, and I've written a lot about the indoctrination that goes on in Palestinian territories of kids, excuse me, in which case we're often talking about young kids. There is video of very small children being taught to play with guns and wear keffiyehs and point the guns at other small children who are supposed to be Israeli settlers. And that's how you get intergenerational hatred, and that's how you get teenagers who are willing to do really disgusting things. I had not thought that it happened in the United States. Now, I'm not talking about making terrorists, okay? But you're talking about the indoctrination of kids in this country into philosophies that show up later and perhaps now are showing up on our college campuses. And NYPD found weapons in some of the encampments that they broke up. Is this what's happening to our kids? They're being taught
Not surprised. I'm not surprised by that at all. And if law enforcement doesn't act, then particularly the outside agitators, the folks who are described in that civil lawsuit I told you about that was been filed in the Eastern District of Virginia against the National Students for Justice in Palestine, American Muslims for Palestine. Look, that's the next step down the road. And that's why you have to act now to say that this kind of behavior is not acceptable and that the individuals engaging in it will be punished even either by law enforcement and justice system, and also in their personal and professional lives for engaging in this kind of behavior.
You mentioned American Muslims for Palestine. Go back to money for a second. It's understood, I think, that Turkey's AK party, which is Erdogan's party, it's the ruling party of Turkey at the moment, maybe not for much longer, but for the moment, is a Muslim Brotherhood supporter and a supporter of American Muslims for Palestine. Who looks at foreign money? Who's looking at organizations taking foreign money? Should we be concerned if Turkey's AK party is putting money into American organizations?
We should. And in fact, in the election area, there's been quite a fervor going on about this. For example, in Ohio, just yesterday, Ohio passed a law in the state Senate. I think it's now over in the state House, trying to ban all foreign funding in the election area. And that's an important area, and it's something that people should think about with regard to other issues too. And that's the idea there, of course, is to make sure that no foreign governments, foreign corporations, foreign individuals are giving money to or trying to, frankly, manipulate American elections in this country. And a lot of states have been passing statutes to ensure that that doesn't happen.
I hope they're enforced, because here come two questions together from people listening. I'll read this one. How can the administration of a university get police involved when city mayors refuse to send the necessary police teams due to fears of being sued? And we had that here in Washington, where Mayor Bowser refused to send the police to remove an encampment. By the way, she changed her mind, and she did remove the encampment after she was invited to come and testify to Congress. But her initial response to this was, what happens on university property is not the city's problem, that she was not going to send the police. How do you get, and now you have to get another layer involved. How do you get the mayor involved in the city council?
That is a real problem, and I don't have an answer to that. I mean, look, it's not just elected officials like mayors who aren't willing to do something about this. You know, the other problem are some of the rogue prosecutors that have been elected in big cities. You know, my colleague Cully Stimson here has written a whole book about these very radical left-wing prosecutors that have been elected in places like Boston, New York, St. Louis, Los Angeles, who they're taught this philosophy, and this is in the curriculum of the law schools, that our entire justice system is systematically racist. That's not true. I mean, the evidence shows it's not true. But you know what's really behind this is they think our entire prison system should be dismantled. I mean, you think I'm exaggerating. No, that's exactly what they think. And that's why you get prosecutors coming in like Alvin Bragg in New York, who when he came in said, I'm not going to prosecute any misdemeanors in the city. And he's only prosecuting about 50% of the felonies. And that problem has also invaded federal prosecutions do. The U.S. attorney in Washington, D.C., is not prosecuting something like 60% of the cases he's getting. And the only way to fix things like that is through elections. Certainly when it comes to mayors and people in towns and cities, when the federal government, well, you know, it depends on who's in the White House as to who's going to appoint U.S. attorneys who might actually do what they're supposed to do, which is prosecute criminals. But that's a tough problem and a tough situation.
It is. And here's a person who gives us two at one. He says, thank you for a great topic. Unfortunately, what should be done to students or agitators or professors will not be done. So how do we deal with the facts on the ground rather than what we wish them to be? But you made one, what I think is an excellent point, publicizing the names of people. If you have the names of people, publicizing the names of people and hoping that that would be enough to keep them out of employment or something. But what else can we do? We have, as you just pointed out, in the big cities where these things are happening, you often have left-wing mayors, left-wing prosecutors, people who don't want to deal with it. What do we do? Do the regular people take their kids out of college and say, my kid's not going to college because of you?
Yeah, well, one thing I would, look, if you have the ability to transfer, if you have a high school senior who got accepted to Columbia, not too late to go somewhere else. I mean, I would do that now. For folks who are there, I think it's everything from talking to the Alumni Association and trying to get them upset about this. As you know, some of the policies at some of these schools have been changing as big time alumni have said, I'm not giving you any more money.
Right.
And there needs to be more solicitation of those alumni to do that kind of thing to affect the university, because the money will move these administrations other ways. But remember, I also mentioned the potential civil lawsuits, and we need more of those, and we need more organizations getting involved in representing students who not only may sue the university, but frankly, sue other students who've been engaged in these activities.
So put their names and faces out there for people. Somebody said that if you get a solicitation, if you're a Columbia alum, for example, you know, they send you solicitations all the time and you either do or don't give the money. But somebody said that what you ought to do is put a dollar bill in the envelope and send it back, because that says to Columbia, I saw it, I read it, and here's what I think of you. If you just throw it in the can, Columbia will send you another one, right? If you send them a dollar and you put a note in there that says, this is what you're getting, maybe it would have an impact on them. Maybe.
Oh, no, I think so. And I think the more criticism in public and the more criticism from alumni, the better things hopefully will get and will improve. It may not be an answer in some places where they have really radical left-wing administrators, but it's one way of going after the universities.
Okay, but money does talk.
Money talks, certainly with university administrators.
Or the absence.
By the way, yeah. Remember, we're talking about private universities, but look, there's plenty of public colleges in this country too. And who's got control over those public colleges? State legislatures. So particularly, look, think about what's happened in Florida. I mean, look, one part of the root of this problem, part of this radicalization that's been going on, are these DEI programs that have been put in.
You didn't talk about that. Go ahead. That's good.
Yeah, because look, if you look at DEI, what it teaches, what it really stands for is discrimination, exclusion, and indoctrination. That's what DEI is. And remember, Florida, they got so upset about it that, you know, Governor DeSantis pushed through and the legislature agreed a law to dismantle the DEI offices at universities throughout the state and to quit teaching what is really a racist propaganda curriculum. That's what DEI is. And that's the kind of thing also that people should realize, if the problem is at a state school, you can go beyond the trustees of that school because the state legislature has complete control over what happens there, how much money they get, and frankly, what's taught at those universities.
So that's sort of federalism. I mean, we in the Jewish Policy Center, I know you do in Heritage also, stress the importance of states versus national government and how important states can be in determining our future. So this is just one more area where states can take a big role in our future and in the future.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
I think that's a great thought. I like it. So we have another question here. Somebody asked you, I think they want bullet points. How would you differentiate a pro-Palestinian demonstration on a campus and a pro-Hamas demonstration? What are the markers that say this can be acceptable and that cannot be acceptable? How would you?
Well, I would want someone who, if they're saying they're pro-Palestinian, is also protesting against Hamas control of Gaza.
Right.
Is that person talking about the fact that they held one election, took control of the government, and haven't held an election since? That they arrest and kill their opponents? That they put weapons, bomb-making facilities in hospitals, under schools, and things like that? Is the individual protesting any of that? Because if they're not, they're saying, well, I support Palestine, but they aren't objecting to any of that. Well, then I would question their sincerity and whether they really aren't indirectly or quietly not wanting to say that they support a terrorist organization. That to me is a way to easily distinguish it.
That's a great, great red flag. Also, it shows the anomaly of having something like, what do they call it? Queers for Palestine. If you know what Hamas does to people who are gay and lesbian.
Yes. I mean, that's...
They throw them off of buildings, you know?
Right. I mean, it's unbelievable.
How can you be a queer for Palestine?
Right. I mean, look, we all, right now, we know that Israel is the only real functioning democracy in the Middle East. And if you are Arab, if you are Palestinian, the safest place for you to be is to be a citizen of Israel. That's the safest place for you to be. It's a place where you actually can exercise the rights of a citizen. That won't happen in Gaza, controlled by Hamas. And I'd love to see someone who says, well, I'm against Hamas and I support Palestinians. Be nice if they recognize, in fact, you know, we would like to be in a place where we are treated the same way Arab citizens in Israel are treated. But of course, you won't hear that from them.
You won't. One of the interesting things about Israel is that, you know, there are people who live, as people live here, illegally in Israel. They don't have the right documentation. A lot of times that is gay people from Gaza or gay people from the West Bank, because they feel safer living illegally in Israel, where they don't think they're going to get killed, than they do living legally in the territories. And so I think you have just put your finger on it. It's a way to understand it. If you are not protesting the bad behavior of Hamas or other Palestinians in the West Bank or Gaza Strip, then you're not pro-Palestinian. You might be anti-Israel, you might be pro-Hamas, but you are not pro-Palestinian. I like it, that works. So now I'm gonna get to my last question, and I don't know if I warned you about this. The last question I ask is designed to elicit a positive response from my guest. Right. So can you give me a positive response to this question? What are the college campuses that have handled the situation the best at home, and what actions did they take to handle it well? Do we have any candidates for college that did a good job?
University of Texas.
Okay.
University of Texas.
Tell us in short form. What did Texas?
Yeah, they started to organize a protest like this. They started doing an encampment. They were warned that you can't do that. You need to leave immediately. And when they didn't do it, not only did the local law enforcement show up, but the Texas State Patrol, the state police, also showed up. They all showed up equipped for it in riot gear, and they immediately started arresting individuals and taking them off the campus. And when that then started to reoccur, they came right back and prevented it. And it hasn't happened. And if nobody has seen this, look at the Google for Ole Miss, University of Mississippi in Mississippi, where it didn't take law enforcement. Hundreds of the students showed up and basically very peacefully got these protesters off campus, including singing that great old 50s song, "Na Na Goodbye." I mean, that you want to see. Let me tell you, if I had a college-age kid about to go off, I would seriously consider sending them to a school like that, where you've got normal, everyday American kids from, you know, all over the country, and they saw what was happening and they stopped it themselves. Like I said, peacefully. But it's a great video if you haven't seen it.
We'll have to go look for it. I'm going to throw in University of North Carolina, where the chancellor went out and pulled the Hamas flag down from the American flagpole and restored the American flag to its place. I think that was and supported, as you say, supported by a lot of students. They came and stood around him while he did it. Okay, so there's some hope, right? You got Texas, you got Ole Miss, you got North Carolina, Florida, right? The rules for Florida are pretty good.
I will say that I remember my family right now is the University of Georgia, and you haven't seen anything like that there either. Look, people, the one thing people I think should keep in mind, this is on a positive note, the majority of the American people today think what's happening on these campuses is terrible. The majority of American people support Israel and its fight against terrorists who want to destroy the country. So it's like so many things. These agitators get all this attention through the media, through the news, but it does not reflect the opinion of the vast majority of Americans, and frankly, the vast majority of college students, as shown by what happened, for example, at the University of Mississippi.
Well, that is a great positive note. Also, it suggests that the South is better than the North. I know you're a Southerner.
I think so. You know, there may have been different during the Civil Rights Movement, but that's not the South today. And I think a lot of people I was born and raised in the South, and I tell you, people down there these days, I think, are a lot more tolerant than parts of New England and other places that I've been. Certainly a lot more tolerant than the campus of Berkeley.
That's true. That's absolutely true. So I thank you at many levels. First of all, this was great. I think we understand a lot more about the choices that administrators have, the choices that the government has, and the choices that students have as well. So for this, I thank you. I thank you for ending on a positive note about the university system. And most of all, right this minute, thank you for ending on a positive note about American citizens and their belief in the rightness of Israel and the need to defend it. That makes our afternoon. Hans Bukowski, thank you on behalf of the listeners. Thank you on behalf of the Jewish Policy Center. I hope you'll come back again.
I'm happy to do that.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.